You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this May 6th, 2026. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is the Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on a overcast and rain-filled Wednesday. Just haven't seen it quite yet. Don't worry, though. It's on its way and has caused all sorts of chaos across the spring sports in the area. But happy to be with you on this Wednesday. Glad to be back in studio for myself. And tons to get to on today's show for the next 2 hours here on ESPN 106.7. Christian, happy Wednesday to you. You're on the receiving end of a lot of those schedule changes because of the weather moving through. So.
Yeah. Lee Scott Academy went from Friday, Saturday to Thursday, Friday to Wednesday, Thursday at 4 and 6. And now today starting at 3. And so, very excited to get on the air and call again the round three, the Elite Eight for 3A. It's coming a little bit earlier than I had anticipated, and so thankfully we had a little bit of time to figure it out and get some time for some prep, and man, we're ready to go. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. So just an hour for me here this afternoon as I make my way over to Tiger Country 104.5 for Lee Scott Academy postseason baseball, but really excited to be able to join for a little bit here this afternoon. I know we have a lot to talk about. We're talking a little bit more baseball on the recap. A little bit, again, kind of closing the book on Texas A&M, also a recap of UAB last night and how there were some goods. There were also some bads in terms of what Butch Thompson saw from his team. We'll dive into that. Also, talk a little bit more about the SEC standings heading into this weekend. We talked yesterday a little bit about the series results from this past weekend and where Auburn sat as if the regular season were to end right now, and how there is a legitimate way that Auburn can play their way into the number 2 seed or drop all the way to the number 9 seed. Yeah. And it wouldn't be that crazy of a scenario. Auburn's going to have to continue to take care of business like they did last night. But we'll be able to talk about those upcoming standings and then flip over to the football side of things, as yesterday we talked about the SEC strength of schedule and kind of ranking all 16 teams according to a couple of websites. And today, not necessarily a team ranking, but a coach ranking. There's a lot of year one guys in the SEC. And so who do we expect to have the best season? And we can multiply that, or we can put that into so many different categories on, okay, does success just mean wins? Does success mean recruiting? Does success mean getting wins over your rivals or doing what you need to do in terms of overall expectations? Should be a really, really fun conversation. We got Jordan Hill moved to 3:30 this afternoon instead of 2:30, just so that way we can have a full hour to break everything down. Should be a whole lot of fun here today.
Yeah, so we start with Auburn baseball, who had its second to last midweek game last night in Birmingham, taking on UAB in the middle of 8 straight games away from Plainsman Park. This the 4th out of 8. Of course, they'll have the 3-game set against Mississippi State this weekend. Then they'll have Jack State on the road next Tuesday before they have Georgia coming to town next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And if you look at the box score alone, Auburn wins 10-2. Auburn jumps out early. It was 1-0 after 2. Auburn led 2-0 after 4. The 5-piece crooked inning in the 5th. Another crooked inning in the 8th, just for good measure. And Auburn walks out with an 8 run win. 10 runs, 13 hits, just one error. You hold UAB to just 2 runs on 7 hits. Pitching was great. Hitting was good. And Auburn gets the win on the box score. Everything looks just fine.
Yeah, stress-free, right? You didn't watch the game as it was relatively different or difficult to. Hopefully everybody was able to tune in over on Wings 94.3 to listen to it. But yeah, if you just go and you look at the score, which in a weird way is one of those games where, okay, well, thankfully, that's what the national media is going to look at.
Sure.
Sometimes
yeah.
you look at it and go, oh, man, I wish people would have watched how this game really played out, because it would benefit this team, or it would show things a little bit more of how, okay, yes, this team lost by 14 points in football, but my goodness, this was a game that this team was up by 3 for a majority, whatever the case may be. This is one of those games, okay, well, not many people from the national media are going to watch it, and all things considered, despite the frustrations, despite what we are about to talk about, being able to set expectations for Coach Butch Thompson, being able to criticize and be able to be frustrated with a win in the column makes things a whole lot easier. People always talk about you can only learn things if you lose. I don't believe in that. I still think you can learn a whole lot through winning as well. I don't think that this Auburn team takes wins for granted just based off of what happens in kind of that middle spot of SEC play. Mm-hmm. So the ability for them to not go out and play the way that they needed to, according to the head man, is a very, we say it all the time, it's almost a refreshing term. It would have, yeah. If we would have gone out there and it would have been, yeah, we're very, very pleased with how it happened, that's almost a recipe for a letdown in the weekend. And so although you still got a win, for it to almost be thought of as a loss in terms of execution rather than simply looking up at the scoreboard, I think is a big time positive moving forward towards this weekend.
Yeah, 4 guys had multi-hit games last night for Auburn. Eric Guevara had 2 hits. Chris Rembert had 2 hits. Brandon McCrane turned it on. He had 3 hits as well. And so did Bub Terrell, who also came away with 3 hits. And so good to see Bub kind of get out of that slump a little bit. Good to see Brandon again pull out of that just a hair. And then look, in terms of Mason McCrane having a hit, a couple of strikeouts, he drew 2 walks as well, so his OBP is just fine. Guevara continues to be a force in that spot. Chris Rembert is looking more like the preseason All-American that we expected him to be. And so, yeah, up and down the lineup, man, you did offensively, again, you come away with 10 runs on 13 hits. That's all you can ask for, especially on the road against a solid UAB team on a midweek.
And it's really refreshing to see Guevara continued to swing the bat so well. Man, he had a really frustrating series at Texas A&M after winning SEC Player of the Week. He could have won SEC Lineout of the Week because, my goodness, after having a frustrating, that being, again, that perfect scenario of the box score, looks like he didn't have a great weekend. Yeah, but he lined out like 8 times, it felt like, and hit 3 more to the wall, to where, man, you add 10 more feet to every single ball that he hits, and he's probably batting .500 over the weekend. To see him go the opposite way, and then for him to also have a home run in there as well. And Bub Terrell, man, that man wants to have so much success. You can see it. You can see, we've talked all about the energy that he brings. Him using the entire length of the outfield is really, really nice to see. Him taking fastballs that are middle to middle away, that are traditionally ones, especially to power left handed hitters that have the long arms that can reach out and yank one down the right field line, very similar to the home run that he hit in Gainesville, a pitch that you don't teach to pull, yet he has enough power to be able to do so. For him to be able to use the entire outfield and line it over short, line it over third, hit the ball to left center field, that is very refreshing. Seeing the ball deep, I think that's when he's at his best, because that makes it to where you're right on time for the fastball, makes it to where your barrel gets sped up a little bit for the off speed, but it makes it to where you're on time. Then all of a sudden, that's when those straightaway right field jacks come, or you're able to use the right center field gap and show off the speed.
I just like the offense being consistent, man. Having several guys in the lineup, again, 4 of them with multi-hit games last night. The idea that, look, Auburn's not going to score 10 runs and get 13 hits in most SEC contests, but just having the ability in there, and it's what we've been asking for weeks now, right? And it's finally coming to fruition of, okay, here's the offense that we thought Auburn could have. And in the midweek, you pair that with what Mr. Graves was able to do on the mound last night. Went 4 complete innings, scoreless innings, by the way, giving up just 3 hits, 1 walk, had a strikeout, but was just efficient, was Griffin Graves. You also got to see 4 other arms for Auburn. Chancellor, Kulik, Johnston, and Brewer all got in. They were the ones who gave up a couple of hits. Jet Johnston, I hate to see him not struggling, but that was not a good performance by him in the one inning that he did pitch. 3 hits, 2 runs, both of them earned, and did have a couple of strikeouts as well, and then you saw Brewer close it out. But yeah, you start getting performances like that from Graves, and once you get into play, he won't be starting on the mound, but somebody that you could go to in a pinch, right? Somebody you could rely on out of the pen if you just need innings, eat innings, and get us to, get us to the home stretch in whatever scenario. It could be a regional, a super regional, Omaha, who knows. You start having performances from a guy that you didn't expect it from, that's a big bonus for Butch Thompson.
Makes it to where people take midweeks with a grain of salt, and I think you should, for the most part, in terms of the overall scoring or the overall record, whatever the case may be. Obviously, you still need big midtime or midweek wins, and Auburn gets another one here. But the ability and the opportunity to use guys that you may not expect to see a whole lot of, but man, the ability to continue to get reps for guys like Griffin Graves or Jet Johnston or Garrett Brewer, again, guys that you know are going to make an appearance sometime in the postseason, and making it to where, okay, Garrett Brewer is out on the mound, or Griffin Graves is out on the mound. The last time we saw him was February 19th, right? I mean, yeah. That's a big-time thing that we talked about. Shoot, we talked about it on the Lee Scott Sports Network in round 2. Where the teams that we were playing hadn't used other than their 2 starters and their 1 other game 3 if needed since before their region play started. And so the ability to get to the bullpen was such a big deal for Auburn, being able to still get really good innings and valuable innings on the mound in these midweeks, I think makes it very, very valuable. That being said, we talked about it. Coach Butch Thompson wasn't necessarily pleased with not necessarily the score, not necessarily the individual performance, but the all-around performance. He said that he was not very pleased with. Said, quote, "I thought that was our worst effort we've had on a baseball field in a few weeks." It's a big statement from a head coach for a team that's going to be a national overall seed if they get 2, if not 3 more wins in SEC play. For him to say the score worked out, they did hit into 3 double plays, but they got 7 of their 9 leadoff men on. We shut down. We had a lack of communication there late. The at-bats deteriorated, so we're thankful for the win. And then he also goes to show the reality by saying, this isn't a dust-up by me trying to just create something that's not truly there. He says, we just committed to 5 weeks of keeping our head down. And so the double plays helped Griffin Graves. There were some good, there were some bad. He finishes it up by saying, I'm not upset or anything, but we are going to pay for it if we see something like that again.
Well, what that means and what that comes down to is, like he said, 4 or 5 weeks ago, Auburn realized, okay, we lost to Texas, we lost to Alabama, got swept by Alabama. We have work to do. We've got to do something different. And I like what he said. We put our head down and we went to work. And that's exactly what Auburn baseball did. And it feels like winning that series at Texas A&M and also doing it the way you did it, right? Winning the first 2 games, and we saw the kind of sort of checkout mentally for Auburn in game 3 in that Texas A&M series. What you don't want, and what Butch Thompson is speaking to, is, okay, we've ascended pretty heavily over the last several weeks. What we don't want to do is not pull up anymore and just flatline and just coast down the home stretch here, because there is still work to do. And you were able to beat UAB, sure, who is a solid team, who will be a nasty 2 seed more than likely in a regional, right? Maybe a 3.
Right now, they're a 3. Flirting with the bubble.
Okay, still a postseason team.
And right now, according to D1 Baseball, and I believe Baseball America as well, UAB will be the 3 seed coming to Plainsman Park.
Which, I mean, shows that winning that game is important all you know, together. But Butch Thompson is saying, hey, we've done a hell of a job of grinding and getting to this point, but we are not done. There are 2 weeks to go in the regular season, and if there was a time for your team to not be all there mentally and not fully bought into a game and just kind of going through the motions and letting your talent take over, it's a midweek game against UAB. You cannot go to Starkville this weekend with that same mentality because you will get swept.
Yes, and again, that's where we'll talk about here in a little bit that Auburn has, you say both of these, but you say the opportunity too. It's the opportunity to move up to the two seed. It's also the opportunity to fall all the way down to a nine seed just based off of what the final six games in SEC play in the roadblock that is the middle of the Southeastern Conference. Thankfully, Auburn is a game or two in front of that, but if they do take that mentality and all of a sudden it is a sweep on the road in Starkville, all of a sudden you're then having to kind of lick your wounds up with the number one team in the SEC in Georgia, who is already, you would imagine, secured a top eight seed, but going for a one, if not a two, or going for the two, if not the one overall national seed, coming to your place where they know a series win would be uber important. You don't have time to really sit there and say, man, if only we had shown more efforts, if only we had done what we needed to do for two more weekends, we'd be where we want to be. Instead, we now have to pack up our luggage, our gear. We get on a plane, get on a bus, and now go to somebody else's home in round one of a regional.
It comes off as you're trying not to peak too early, yep. Right? And that it seems like coaches will never go into that, but that's kind of where we are, is you're hoping that's not it. But I don't think Auburn has, because this was purely an effort thing, like you mentioned. And so control the controllables. That's what coaches like Butch Thompson talk about all the time. And so that's what Auburn has to do. He says they didn't do it last night, but they have to do it going in to Stark Vegas this weekend. A Thursday, Friday, Saturday series, Auburn and Mississippi State heading into a big one. We'll tell you what the latest SEC standings are with 2 weeks to go in conference play, where Auburn is, where Auburn can be, who a team is that probably will not be caught up to, but a log jam there in the middle as well. We will continue talking baseball, plus a shout out for Auburn softball as well, as they come up with a big swing in the SEC tournament. All that and more as we're just underway here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
From revolution to rockets, from dusty frontiers to city skylines, these are the moments that shaped America. This is the American Minute, presented by Bucks Island. March 1836. An old Spanish mission in San Antonio had become a fortress. Inside, fewer than 200 Texan defenders held their ground. Outside, thousands of soldiers under General Santa Anna surrounded them. For 13 days, the small garrison resisted. Among the defenders were James Bowie and Davy Crockett. When the final assault came before dawn, the defenders were overwhelmed, but their stand became a rallying cry. Remember the Alamo. Weeks later, Texas forces secured independence. One more moment that shaped the country we call home. This American Minute is presented by Bucks Island, family owned and operated, serving boaters since 1948. Online at bucksisland.com.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We are back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Talking Auburn baseball, and we stick with Diamond Sports. We'll talk more baseball in just a moment. The latest SEC standings, the latest projections for the college baseball tournament. You've got Baseball America. You've got D1 Baseball. A fascinating trend in terms of Auburn's potential super regional matchup that could happen inside of Plainsman Park. But got a shout out. What happened in Lexington earlier today?
Yeah.
About 12:30 this afternoon, Auburn softball, a team whose record is not good. The season has not been what they wanted it to be. And they went to the SEC softball tournament in Lexington with pretty much nothing to lose. And they would have to make a miraculous run to have any sort of chance to make a postseason after this.
Yeah, going into the SEC softball tournament, they needed 3 wins to be eligible for the postseason.
Eligible.
Yes.
It doesn't even mean they'd get
selected.
Doesn't mean
they get in, but it means that for their name to even be on a calling card to where they could get into the postseason. And yeah, we talked with Britt after the win over Missouri yesterday, and he mentioned this Texas A&M team. It's a really good team. He mentioned their high-powered offense, and it was a team that, funny enough, Auburn had not played in the regular season. I brought that to his attention, and he said, well, I think it might benefit Auburn more because, in a weird way, they also haven't faced Auburn.
And what a game it was earlier today. In the SEC tournament, in the second round, we got to tune in. We were checking scores kind of throughout the morning, and we hopped on Weagle 91.1, the student radio station where Auburn softball was broadcasted with the Auburn Sports Network, with our good friend Britt Bowen.
Our former home.
Our starting spot, our starting place. And
who thought we'd be here?
Definitely not us. This game was tied 8-8 going into the top of the seventh inning.
After Auburn blowing a lead, Auburn was up 7-3 after three. Texas A&M then responded, actually it was 8-3 going into the home half of the fifth, and A&M responded with two in the fifth and three in the sixth to tie the game.
And it was like, oh no, here we go, right? Auburn's got two runners on, girl in the box, tied up at eight, top of the seventh inning, Auburn the road team here, and hit a nuke, a three-run bomb, did Auburn softball after fighting off three straight 3-2 pitches. Foul ball, foul ball, foul ball, and sent one over the center field wall. Auburn gets a three-run shot in the top of the seventh. They hold them off in the eight, or the bottom of the seventh, 11-8. Auburn softball takes down Texas A&M. The 14th seed does it again. They beat Missouri. Now they beat Texas A&M, and their reward is a date with the Gators tomorrow at 10 a.m.
Britt said it best. We'll keep rolling the dice.
Yeah.
Hope it lands on sixes or whatever you need it to land on that roll, I guess.
Yeah.
We didn't ask him that far. I didn't ask what numbers he needed. But he said, we'll keep on rolling the dice. And it was Ava Ratliff, the catcher, who was hitting only 202, man, entering the day. Had two long balls. And you mentioned it. Runners on the corners, two outs, tied at eight. We saw eight pitches of the at-bats, and the ninth was a fastball elevated, hit straight over the center field wall, and shout out to, again, our good buddy Britt. We got to talk to him yesterday. A heck of a call as well. You could see that it wasn't a no-doubter. It took a little bit of time, but, man, it allowed the intensity to build. And when the ball left the building, place went absolutely electric. Britt and JJ went absolutely electric. And so, again, still an uphill battle. Yet that being said, how nice is it to continue to have an uphill battle? And Mr. Britt Bowen, if you're listening, I hope that that coffee this morning or the second cup of coffee was very, very nice to you.
Yeah, so Auburn survives. They'll play Florida tomorrow, 10 a.m. in the SEC tournament third round. They will take on Florida there in Lexington. A reminder that the SEC tournament starting next year will be held in Huntsville. That'll be held at
Rocket City.
Yeah, home of the Trash Pandas. And so I like that. I know they try to move it around and have played in several SEC locations. Auburn, was it last year or 2 years ago that Auburn hosted the SEC softball tournament? And, you know, one neutral location, I think, just makes it easier. Everybody kind of converges on one center point rather than, hey, Auburn, congrats, you're going to Como. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I think that'll be good. So, yeah, I wanted to shout out Auburn softball. That's a big deal that they got to not walk it off, but they got to extend their season with a big win, big swing earlier this morning.
Yeah, yeah, really, really cool. Again, they got swept by Missouri in the regular season. They win that one in round one. They had not played A&M throughout the regular season. They win that one here this afternoon, or I guess this morning into this afternoon. And then they take on a really, really hot Florida team that took two of three against them, but Auburn did steal one in the swamp. And so maybe the neutral side is where Auburn needs to continue to have their success. We'll see if they can do so tomorrow morning.
So that'll be on Weagle 91.1 if you want to tune in with Britt Bowen, JJ on the call as well. But talking more Auburn baseball as we have a couple of minutes before we take our bottom of the hour break. And latest SEC standings and baseball projections for Auburn heading down the stretch, two series to go. We've talked about what the quote magic number could be for Auburn, right? You and I feel you win two, you are in and comfortable and good. You win three, you're a national seed and you're hosting a super. If you get there, Auburn has a chance to do that and then some. But latest SEC standings, and then we'll go into some of the postseason projections.
Yeah, again, Georgia 18-6. I don't believe that they are going to be caught because again, even if they only take one and Auburn sweeps them, that still puts you a game, if not two games, out in front if you're the Georgia Bulldogs. So I think Georgia has all but wrapped up the top seed in the SEC regular season. Texas and Texas A&M are right behind them at 15-8. And again, their record is a little bit different. And how funny would this be? Because Texas A&M beat Texas 2-0 in their series. They did not play game three because of weather. And so how funny would that be of Texas and Texas A&M finishing with the same record, but Texas A&M winning the head-to-head over that? And hopefully that game doesn't make an overall impact on the rest of the tournament, because then all of a sudden, if you're Auburn, and it's like, okay, well, if A&M goes and loses this game, we go from the 5 seed to the 4 seed or whatever the case may be, or the 3 to the 2. We want them to go out and play that game. But we'll wait to see what that looks like. And then you have Mississippi State and Auburn right there at 14-10. Going to be a really, really fun series upcoming this weekend. Alabama, Arkansas, and Florida at 13-11. Ole Miss and Oklahoma at 12-12. And then Tennessee and Kentucky 11-13. And so, I mean, so many opportunities still with 6 games to go. This is not something where, okay, there's a 4-game gap between the 4th seed and the 5th seed, to where all you really have to do is win 1 game to lock up a bye in the top 4 seeds. Here at the spot where, man, 1 game could determine you getting a 4 seed, you getting a 7 seed, much less an entire series that could make or break a regional spot or a possible super regional spot. So much still to play for. And if you're the Auburn Tigers, again, what an opportunity that it is that you have. You keep playing good baseball. You feel like you've already you've locked up a regional spot. I don't think that there's any question on that. Even if you're 0-6, which would be really frustrating, but even if you do happen to go 0-6, I don't think that there is a world where you are not hosting a regional. Yet that being said, if you win one of the series, if you can take 3 total games, I think you're in a great spot. If you somehow got to 4, I think you're competing for a top 4 national seed, which puts you at a really good spot.
Which is what a lot of the projections are saying. Auburn has every opportunity to be a top 8 seed, to host a super. And there are some projections as of right now, Christian, that have Auburn matched up with Alabama in a super regional. Could you imagine?
Yeah.
As the music kicks us out.
And that was my mistake from yesterday, because I read it the second the D1 Baseball released it. I initially said that Auburn was matched up with the Gainesville regional. No. Auburn is matched up with the Tuscaloosa regional. If things were to end right now, Auburn is the number 6 national seed, Alabama as the 11 national seed. Would that bring excitement, or would that
stress,
bring a nervous energy of Jabba possibly working its way back into effect?
I don't know. We'll worry about that if it happens. But it would be insane, that 3-game inside of Plainsman Park. Auburn has every chance to get there and then some. We'll put a pin in baseball for now. Talk a little college football. There's some developing stories across the sport we've got to tell you about coming up next.
We're halfway through hour number 2. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. And we take a break from talking baseball, softball, the diamond sports, because we are now officially, my friends, into talking season. And that comes with a lot of fun, unique, and mostly random conversations at times. And I was thinking about this the other day and was looking at it, and the amount of year one head coaches that we have in the SEC, at least year one head coaches at their current school, right? It's pretty remarkable. And so I wanted to open this up and have a fun conversation, Christian. Who will have the best year one at their new school? Again, this is a combination of coaches who have been head coaches before. You've got some coordinators who are now coaches. Several different scenarios. But which year one head coach at their new school in the SEC will have the best year coming up in 2026? Alex Golish at Auburn, John Summerall at Florida, Ryan Silverfield at Arkansas, Lane Kiffin at LSU, Pete Golding at Ole Miss, or Will Stein at Kentucky. So that is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 coaches who will be a head coach at their current school for the first time, for the first year. And so of those six, who has the best year one? You can rank them. You can kind of pick and choose. This is an open conversation for us. We did some research and talked about it a little bit. Have not compared notes.
Sure.
Have not looked at each other's, if you will. But we want to have a fun discussion here because, I mean, there is no wrong answer. It's a true prediction.
Yeah.
But you could convince me on just about all six of these guys. Yeah, they're going to have the best year one at their new school.
Yeah, and again, there's so many different categories that you can rank best year one, which makes it an open-ended question, right? I mean, this could be looked at, okay, who has the best overall record? Well, that dives into, okay, well, when you're looking at a guy like Silverfield at Arkansas, he's immediately off the list because, my goodness, if Arkansas wins five games, that's going to look like not a great season. Yet with those expectations and that schedule, he could be the best in terms of exceeding some of those expectations. I think that we're both in that same boat of Will Stein at Kentucky. I think is going to have a lot of success, man. I will put Kentucky in a very, I can't believe I'm saying this. This is not in terms of overall success, but this is, in terms of how we thought of them this year compared to this upcoming season, but Texas Tech. And by no means, I do not mean that from the standpoint.
Get ready and clip it, boys.
I do not mean that from the playoff perspective. I mean that from, man, it's one of those, okay, if you told me Texas Tech was going to have success next year, I believe you. And yes, they still had a whole lot of it, but you could tell they were not quite ready for the limelight, even though they did make the college football playoffs. But, man, you look into now this season, and I feel like there's a whole lot of success. I feel like Will Stein at Kentucky can fall into that category of you're going to see glimpses, you're going to see bits and pieces, but with the recruiting that he's able to do and has done so far, if you can keep some of the talent from the transfer portal this year and then you can stack that onto next year, I think there's a whole lot of success that can be built right there. I think Lane Kiffin can obviously be in that conversation just based off of the transfer portal. You talk about year one pressure. I think he's at the very top of that. I don't think there's a single doubt in my mind. Pete Golding, you don't by any means say that it's stress-free, but I think there's a little bit of leniency. Obviously, Trinidad Chambliss coming back, which he had comments about yesterday, or was it the day before, talking about, there were serious conversations about me moving to LSU and going with Coach Lane Kiffin, but then he talked with Golding and realizing that he wanted to stay at Ole Miss, and I guess at the time, there wasn't sure, they weren't sure about his eligibility status, and I don't think Lane Kiffin wanted to take that risk. And he was like, okay, well, let me go get somebody that still has two, if not even more, years of eligibility. And that was why Golding pursued Deuce Knight the way that he did before Trinidad got his eligibility back. But I think that Pete Golding can be in that conversation just based off of the talent. And I know that their schedule is relatively favorable. And I think you throw Alex Golish in that comparison as well, in that conversation, just because success can be looked at so many different ways. And for us speaking from the Auburn perspective, man, we talked about it yesterday and talked about it Monday. What would we give for 7 wins? What would we give for 8 wins? And although at some of these programs, 8 wins at LSU would be a little bit frustrating. 8 wins at Ole Miss would be a little bit frustrating. I feel like Auburn is at a point to where, my goodness, 8 wins would mean that you're doing a whole lot of things right and would show that you have a whole lot that you're able to stack on and show promise in year one to where you're no longer at the point of selling hope. You're showing and you're selling real results on the field that matter, and you're backing that up with a win and loss record.
And I think you could even make it, like you were saying, as simple as, okay, did you exceed or even meet expectations?
Yeah,
or
it's like the non-numerical report card of meets expectations, exceeds expectations, yeah. or did not meet expectations.
Yeah, and I think a very simple way to do that is to look at win totals.
Yeah.
Right? Do you get to your win total? Arkansas, 4.5.
Meaning not win totals in comparison to all these, just their projected win
yeah,
totals.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, just an individual team's projected win total,
sure.
right? Arkansas, 4.5. Auburn at 6.5. Florida, 7.5.
Ooh.
Okay, Kentucky, 4.5. LSU is at 8.5, and then Ole Miss in there as well at 7.5.
There's no SEC team above 9.5, right?
I believe so. At least when they opened up, Alabama still 8.5, Georgia still 9.5, and Texas is still 9.5.
Yeah,
yeah. I think there were two or three Big Ten teams that have 10.5 win
there
totals,
were, yeah.
and yeah, none in the SEC do. And Big Ten people will tell you it's because their conference is better, and at least at the top, it is.
But I think that that's a perfect counter argument
for the SEC to say, well, our schedule is tougher.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, you could throw out the projected win totals and say, okay, how many of first year head coaches in the league, how many of the six go over their win total, right? I think that's part of this conversation. For Arkansas, 4.5 wins. I'm not ready to give them 4.5 wins right now. Could they get there? Absolutely. But we talked yesterday about that schedule. It's the hardest in the country, or at least the hardest in the SEC. One of the hardest in the country. Always has been, always will be. Auburn is the same way. Are we trusting that Florida gets 8 wins in year one with Summerall?
That's a lot.
That's a lot in year one with the schedule that they have. And when I look at LSU in particular, their win total projection is 8.5. And we talked about that schedule yesterday. Clemson, at Ole Miss, Texas A&M, at Kentucky, home for State, at Auburn, a week off. And then November is Bama, Texas, at Tennessee, at Arkansas. On paper, I'll give LSU La Tech. I'll give you McNeese. I'll give you Kentucky. I'll give you Mississippi State. I'll give you Arkansas. That's what I give. That's 5 for LSU that I give you just on paper. But
which makes it to where if you go 4-3 in the other 7, then you
yeah.
hit that total.
Yeah. So, is 9 wins the expectation at LSU? Hell no. The expectation is to get to the college football playoff and be a national title contender because they're paying $4 million for offensive tackles.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. As you look at the totals, and it just makes you sick to think about. Rapid fire for Florida, just to end this conversation. Florida Atlantic University.
Yeah, that's right. Again, 7.5 is the win total for Florida.
For Florida, Florida Atlantic, 1. Campbell, 2. And then all of a sudden,
don't count out the camels now.
Hey, I mean, Loretta makes her way to Auburn for midweek baseball games. So, but it's Florida Atlantic, Campbell. I'll give you maybe South Carolina since it's at home.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
I'll give you either Kentucky or Vanderbilt.
I have to see Florida and them prove that they're the better team and Summerall's the better coach before I just write those in Sharpie. Yeah, I agree.
That's 4. Because this schedule is Florida Atlantic, Campbell. Their first road trip is to Jordan-Hare Stadium. They
yeah,
go to Auburn
right.
on September 19th. You back that up, going back home to take on Ole Miss. You then go to Columbia to take on Missouri. You're then back at home for South Carolina before you go to Austin to take on Texas.
Man.
You then have your bye week. You then go and take on Georgia. Again, the conversation we had yesterday, that's no longer, at least not this year, at the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. That is in the world's largest
Auburn home stadium.
Auburn home stadium, yeah, of Mercedes-Benz Stadium, taking on Georgia again at a neutral site, and then it's home for Oklahoma at Kentucky, home for Vanderbilt and Florida State.
You know what's cool about this conversation? Again, we're talking about which year one head coaches, not first year as a head coach, but year one coaches at their current school in the SEC, out of the 6, who will have the best season. We can judge this just based off of what they do head-to-head. Look at all the head-to-heads you have of these 6 coaches with Auburn, Florida, Arkansas, LSU, Ole Miss, and Kentucky. All of these teams play each other several times in some way, shape, or form. I mean, I don't
read
think,
me all 5 or the other 5 other than Florida.
Other than Florida, Auburn, Arkansas, LSU, Ole Miss, and Kentucky.
Okay, they don't play.
I mean,
they don't
everybody
play LSU,
on this
I was
list
gonna say,
plays each other plays. Every team on this list plays at least 2 of the other teams.
Yeah,
at least.
Florida plays 3. They play at Auburn. They play at Kentucky and then home for Ole Miss.
I mean, LSU plays Ole Miss, Auburn, Florida, right? I mean, yeah. They play Arkansas at the end of the season. LSU does. That's their finale.
Completely random thought.
I think they play Kentucky as well.
Over the summer, we need to have a conversation on projecting college game day sites. I think that's a fun conversation.
Yeah, we can do that. We can do that when we do projected win total conversations, which we'll do at some point. But in terms for Alex Golish, right, and how he fares in year one, will he have the best year of these six coaches? And again, this is a very open conversation. This is a very open discussion. It's an open-ended one, if you will, where there is no right answer on what success is in year one. But I think just meeting expectations is the bare minimum. And what is that for Auburn? I think that's a conversation we're going to have over the next several weeks, several months of, okay, what are the legitimate, realistic expectations? Because for LSU, it's simple. LSU is make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Kentucky, I think, is flirt with a bowl game. I think for Florida, it's have a say in the SEC and the college football playoff. Maybe not make it. I think that's a lot, but I think have a say. I think Auburn's kind of in that group too. Ole Miss is the biggest wild card. Arkansas is just don't get killed. Ole Miss.
Arkansas is, man, if you're bowl eligible,
you overachieved.
You are in a spot that they wouldn't, that our buddy Ty would not believe.
I expect Kentucky to have a better season than Arkansas. They have the same projected win total at 4.5. I expect Kentucky to have a better year than Arkansas. Well, Ole Miss is a wild card. I don't know what their expectation is. They made the playoffs last year, and Pete Golding was coaching that team in the postseason. Yeah. So do they expect him to get them? I don't know. I would personally say no, but I'm not an Ole Miss fan. So I don't know. Maybe that's something we learn throughout the summer, media days, and things like that. But for Auburn, I think the expectation is a winning season. I think that's it. Bare minimum, the expectation is a winning
season. Do you consider 6-6 a winning season?
No.
Okay, so you are saying that for them to meet the expectations is to go above their win total of 6.5.
I think so,
you look at the schedule, and by no means are we sharpieing this in, but there's been a lot of conversations on the start of Auburn being 4-0 to get the regular season started. Baylor at home in Atlanta. Southern Miss, home for Florida, and home for Vanderbilt. Yes, that's a very tall task, but for the sake of conversation, if you start 4-0, you have to go 500. Not even the rest of the year. And there's Samford in there. There's Mississippi State. There's Arkansas. Those three are back-to-back-to-back. Arkansas, at State, and back home for Samford. You win that three stretch, and you win that stretch of four at home, right there is quote-unquote meeting expectations. Man, simple game, really.
It really is. Just win.
Just win the games that you're supposed to, and just win some of the games you're not supposed to, and call it a day. I mean, it's really easy.
You'll be the best first-year head coach in the SEC, and you will get our recognition on this very program.
Boom.
I mean,
what more do you need?
What more do you want? What more do you need? I don't think there's anything, really.
Give us an NIL deal. We'll talk about it more.
Sign us up, man. Put us on the practice squad. We'll make it happen. All right, we will take our final break here in the first hour of the show. Christian, I know you got to go. I'll plug your stuff.
Yeah.
When we come back to wrap up the show, I'll plug your stuff, plug my stuff with all the weather changes for high school baseball and things. So we'll plug all that, and we'll wrap up hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line right after this on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7 as we were talking about year one head coaches in the SEC. Six new coaches in the league, and I guess six new coaches at new teams, right? One of those coaches just went from one SEC team to the other. But we were talking about who will have the most success in year one at their respective programs. And we got a text in the on-the-line text box that I thought was fascinating. And it says, over or under, right? Over under, 2.5 of those six coaches are still coaching at that school in the 2030 season. So think about that. That is the 26th, the 27th, the 28th, the 29th. So how many of those coaches go into their fifth season at their current school? Those being, okay, the six that we were just talking about, those being Alex Golish at Auburn, John Summerall at Florida, Ryan Silverfield at Arkansas, Lane Kiffin at LSU, Pete Golding at Ole Miss, and Will Stein at Kentucky. Over under 2.5 of those guys going into their fifth season. And 2.5 is a pretty darn good line. And coming from the person it came from, I'm not surprised. Shout out to you, my friend. Man, I don't know. I'm not confident in Silverfield surviving 5 years at Arkansas. I'm not confident in Pete Golding surviving 5 years at Ole Miss. Will Stein at Kentucky is interesting because if he just brings any sort of relevance to that team, they probably won't fire him, right? Unless he were to leave for a different job. That's a different scenario. I would love to say that Alex Golish is going to go into his fifth season and start as the Auburn head coach in 2030, but I'm not willing to go there yet. I'm not buying into that. Lane Kiffin seems to be the most solid one, right? Because he has proven that he is a good head coach. He has proven he can get teams to the college football playoff. He has proven he can't win the biggest of big games consistently. Maybe that changes at LSU with the most talent that he's ever had and one of the most expensive college football rosters we've ever seen. But if I had to say over under 2.5 of those coaches going into their fifth year, I'm going to say over, and I'll take 3. I'll say 3 of those 6 will survive the first 4 years of their term at their current school. But 3 of them will most likely not. And again, Pete Golding, Ryan Silverfield, John Summerall is an interesting one too. I mean, I think he's going to be successful. And to be honest with you, I want him to be successful. I want it to work out for Florida. I do. I thought Billy Napier was that guy. It just didn't work, and I think he was a bit too stubborn to figure it out and make it work down there, but I think he's got a good shot to be the guy. And, you know, that question is loaded, too, because it not only says, or I guess asks, how good that coach will be, but that's also asking what is the leash, right, that these schools and these programs and these athletic departments are going to give a certain head coach. The leash at Kentucky for Will Stein is a hell of a lot longer than the leash for Alex Golish at Auburn, right? I think Will Stein could survive 5 years just by shaking the right hands. Alex Golish got to survive 5 years. You got to win some ball games. And so, as we were saying earlier, too, right before Christian dipped out of here, what does Pete Golding have to do at Ole Miss? I don't know. Genuinely, I don't know. What is the standard? What is the expectation? I think fans probably want more college football playoff taste, right? And if he doesn't hit that for 3 years in a row, then what do they do? Because are you going to find better than what you have with Pete Golding? Are you going to find better than what you had with Lane Kiffin? Right, you didn't move on from Lane Kiffin. He moved on from you, but, man, he's the best coach they've ever had. At least made them the most relevant in recent memory. So, I don't know. You got to be careful if you're a place like Ole Miss firing a good coach in hopes for a great one. Because as Auburn knows, a great coach is not guaranteed. And it's been a long time, and great coaches don't come by often. So, I'll take over. I'll say 3 of those 6 of the new coaches in the SEC at a new school in year one, I'll say 3 of them start their fifth season at the same place. But I guess we'll have to wait and see. Hour number one is in the books. Stick around. We got a fun guest, a repeating guest coming up to start hour number two, plus Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. We bumped him to the second hour. He'll join us as well. All that here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7 Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. No Christian Griffin in the studio. He is over at Lee Scott Academy and just went on the air. Him and Caleb Robertson on the call for the Elite Eight for Lee Scott Academy baseball against Thomasville. That over on Tiger Country 104.5. We'll talk more about that as the second hour goes on. So it's you and me in the studio for hour number two. And it was like that yesterday with Christian, just with playoff baseball and different things going on. We're kind of in and out, but making the most of it and having a good time on this Wednesday afternoon. If you missed any of the first hour of today's show, you can always go back and catch it with the podcast version of it. You'll find that on our station website at ESPNAU.com. And in that first hour, Christian was here. We talked Auburn baseball as they handled business in Birmingham last night against UAB. But Coach Butch Thompson had some comments and some words for his team and hoping they bring a better mentality to Starkville this weekend. Talked about that, plus had a fun conversation on which year one head coach in the SEC for football will have the best season. Six new coaches and new places. Had a fun conversation about that as well. So all of that on the podcast version of the show in hour number one at ESPNAU.com. And in hour number two, it's loaded with guests. Our guy Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, having him come on at 3:30 rather than 2:30 today just because of the moving around and things. So he's going to join us at 3:30 to give us updates from Athens on Georgia football, Georgia basketball, adding some new players and things like that as well. So that's coming up at 3:30. But we start the second hour with a guest who has been on several times. He was on yesterday, and Christian said it was so much fun. I figured that I would do it too and bring on our good friend Britt Bowen, the voice of Auburn University softball, because if the Tigers keep winning, Britt, we'll keep talking to you on the show. How about that?
Well, it worked yesterday, so I said, what the heck, let's try it again today and see if it works again tomorrow. Heck of a job by this team today, and because you knew, no disrespect to Missouri, but you knew today was going to be a much tougher challenge, and it proved to be A&M's offense. I mean, they can score the best of them, but as Auburn proved today, Auburn's can too. So 11 runs off 10 hits, it was a fun day to be at the ballpark.
Britt, where does this game, Auburn wins the second round of the SEC softball tournament as the 14 seed, right? The bottom seed in the tournament, beating Missouri, then taking on the 6 seed Texas A&M today and winning 11-8 in dramatic fashion. We're going to break it down and let you discuss it because your call was just incredible. Where does this game rank for you in your play-by-play career? I mean, look, we understand how much of a pleasure that is and a blessing it is and how awesome those moments are. Where did that rank for you today, my friend?
You know, it's hard to rank them, and I say this because, like, and I don't say this in an arrogant way. Like, as I've told you guys before, this is a dream and something I don't take for granted. But you know, like, the World Series, the games at the World Series in 2016, the SEC Tournament Championship in 16 is there, but also, like, even then in the past, like, this one's got to be up there because, like, I don't ever remember a game like this with 5 home runs, let alone 7 home runs in 2 games. This one's up there for me because you just don't have a chance to call, even in 14 years of doing it, you don't have that many chance to call games of this caliber, especially when your season's on the line. So 2016, 2015, not in the books. I mean, it's up there because – again, like it, the clutch moments and players coming through are things that you cannot script. You know, we all in moments as play-by-play announcers, we like to think we know how we're going to handle stuff. And I'll say I'm bad about it. I know the professionals on TV, those guys are a little better at it than I am, but I just knew I said gone for a really long time, and I don't quite remember what I said after that today. Again, just thankful to be here and thankful to have JJ alongside of me, because what people don't realize, like, yes, it's fun to do play-by-play and things, but to make a full broadcast, you got to have somebody right next to you who understands, A, how to broadcast, but B, is bringing something that you're not. And JJ, he does that every single time out. And as you know, it's a lot better to call with someone than by yourself. So thankful to have him here this week.
Well, it's been a fun two games for Auburn softball again, taking down Missouri in game one of the tournament on Tuesday, 6-2, then winning in an incredible performance today in the second round, taking down the sixth seed Texas A&M by a score of 11-8. We're talking with Britt Bowen, the voice of Auburn University softball here on ESPN 106.7, who had a front row seat and was calling it as it happened. And look, this was not stress-free, drama-free by any means. No. Auburn scores in the top of the first, A&M responds with a crooked inning three in the bottom of the first. Auburn then responds themselves with a crooked number four in the top of the second, leading 5-3, then leading 7-3, and then here comes Texas A&M. I mean, walk us through the ebbs and flows, the ups and downs, the roller coaster ride you went on for a couple of hours today.
There's a saying in Auburn media, and pardon me, that I can't remember who said it, but I've seen it a couple times. Auburn can never play a normal game in anything, in any sport. Yep. I am a firm believer in that, as an Auburn broadcaster. And I mean that with, just the most love and support for Auburn, but, you knew A&M was gonna make a push back, right? Cause they have the offensive talent to do it. I mean, truthfully, their offense can score with the best of them. They have all year long. And it started in the fifth inning, where Auburn has a chance to make a play on the right side of the infield. Hot shot comebacker. Two players have a chance at it. Auburn just can't field it cleanly. And then you have Maya Perez, an All-American, one of the top home run hitters in the country, coming to the plate. And she has a 10-pitch at bat. Well, she has a pop-up to home plate, and it's foul, but it's tailing back in. Ratty, the catcher, she had her mask on, so it was probably tough to see. Auburn doesn't make that play. Two or three pitches later, bam, she hits a two-run home run, and that sets Texas A&M up for an opportunity in the sixth. And again, they piece it together one by one. I mean, their eight-hole hitter hits a one-out home run, and then they string together three singles in a row. They get a two RBI single, I think it was off the bat of Michaela Wark. And just like that, A&M, they've tied it, and you feel like they have the momentum. But Auburn, this team's credit, the offense has not wavered. They have not backed down from any challenge, and you need your best players to step up in the big moment. Annalee Adams, she sets the tone with a leadoff walk in that inning, and then you follow that up. I mean, Mania Womack, who's hit, what, two home runs against LSU, hit a home run yesterday. She's asked to lay down a sack bunt, guys. She does that. Sacrifices herself to move Annalee Adams up, and then Destiny Rodriguez, she's the veteran that Auburn's relying on, her leadership. She gets a one-out single for you. Haven Roebuck, tough at bat, strikes out, and then Ava Ratliff comes to the plate. I mentioned she had a tough play the inning before at catcher, and boy, did she redeem herself with a three-run home run, and it was a beauty to straightaway center. And it was Haven Roebuck who hit the home run yesterday. Ava Ratliff hits the home run today. Those two are roommates, and they told each other, hey, no moment is bigger than it needs to be.
That's cool.
And both of those two freshmen come through in the clutch for Auburn, and that's why Auburn's going to the SEC quarterfinal tomorrow.
Britt Bowen, the voice of Auburn softball, with us here on ESPN 106.7. After Auburn takes down Texas A&M in Game 2 of the SEC softball tournament, 11-8. And we were listening to your call, my friend, and it was, what, three straight pitches that Ratliff fouled off at 3-2 before she was able to send one over the center field wall. I mean, that just shows the commitment and the grind and the willingness to not give in to an AB by this Auburn squad, because Auburn can score in a hurry. We've seen that in times all year long.
Well, and I can't think of another SEC team, and there may be one, but I can't think of another SEC team that has three freshmen in the bottom of their lineup and having to start and having to get meaningful at-bats against the competition in this conference. It's the best in the country. And Haven stepped up yesterday. She hit a big two-run home run today. Ratty gets the game winner. And then how about Daigle Wilson? I mean, Daigle has played well for Auburn. She got a single today. And I think about Ava and Daigle. You know, these are kids that got thrown into the fire this year. Ava with Kylie Brockman being injured. Daigle with Destiny Rodriguez going down at Oklahoma. I mean, listen, it's easy to be critical of this team, especially where this Auburn softball team has been. Obviously, everyone wants them to be more successful, you know, wants 5 to 10 more wins than what they have. But these kids are giving it their all, you know, and watching them in this tournament, not a whole lot of people were giving them an opportunity. And the way these kids have, again, I said this yesterday, the way they've stayed together, the way this coaching staff has kept them together, they've absolutely earned my respect, and excited to see what they can do tomorrow.
Well, yeah, the opportunity shifts to the three-seeded Florida Gators in that game tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Central Time, right, Britt? 10 a.m.?
Yep, 10 a.m. Central Time. I was talking to Riker Chasen on the bus ride back, and he's the pitching coach for Auburn, and he said, well, we're going to have to piece it together tomorrow because Ella, you know, she got the complete game shutout at Florida in game two of that series. Well, Ella started games one and two. I'd be surprised if she started tomorrow, but never say never. But as I told Riker, I said, hey, look, if you'd have told us on the plane ride here on Monday that we would be piecing together a pitching effort on Thursday, every single person on that plane would have taken that. And the thing that I find confidence in, you haven't thrown Abby Herndon yet, and you haven't thrown S.J. Guerin yet. And again, you still have Ella, you still have Charlie. You have a lot of options for tomorrow. Again, it's going to be an all-staff effort. Look, roll the dice. I mean, your offense is swinging it with the best of them right now. Go out, play the best you can, and see what happens.
Well, you mentioned Auburn did get a win in the three-game set just a few weeks ago. Do you know, or have you talked to the coaching staff? You were just talking about the pitching coach in general, but
sure,
what they're going to take away from that series, not even just the win, because you know this, you can take just as much in the loss as you can the win. Do you know what Auburn is planning on taking strategy-wise from that game or that series? Because, look, tomorrow's the toughest test of the year against the three-seeded Florida Gators.
You just asked me one question. I'm asking Chris Malvo tomorrow in the pregame interview on the leadoff show, because asked that same question yesterday for the Missouri game. Of course, today a bit different because Auburn hasn't played Texas A&M.
Right.
And here's the thing. I mean, they played in late in the month of April. You know, Auburn's going to be looking heavily on the pitching scouts, and Florida, to their credit, they've got one of the better arms in the league, in my opinion, and Keegan Rothrock. But the question is, does Florida throw her tomorrow? Because if you win tomorrow and you're Florida, are you trying to save Rothrock for the likes of Alabama or Arkansas in the SEC semifinal on Friday? So that's a decision that Tim Walton has to make. I am not sure. I have no idea what Florida is going to do. Again, Rothrock, she had two really good outings against Auburn and Gainesville. She got some starts in games one and three. So we'll see. Like I said, both coaching staffs have a decision to make. But make no mistake, I mean, Florida, they're a really good team. And while today was as fun as could be for Auburn, you got to come back and find a way to do it again tomorrow, because Auburn, you're playing for a postseason berth tomorrow. You win tomorrow, you're in the NCAA tournament, and that's what's on the line tomorrow for the Auburn Tigers.
Which you said, that's not a spot that Auburn thought they were going to be in just a couple of days ago. I mean, it's just being honest, and now that's what makes these tournaments cool, is you can still play your way into anything. thing in terms of postseason play. And Brett, before we let you go, with how the SEC softball tournament is set up, a team like Florida has the double bye, so they'll be playing their first game of the week tomorrow. Auburn now going into its third game in 3 days. Do you buy into that at all, if one team has the advantage or the disadvantage of playing or resting or whatever the case may be?
I don't think there's any disadvantage, truthfully, to getting that much rest, truthfully. I mean, because anytime you can get rest, you take it. But at the same time, there is something to be said about the momentum that a team can take from one game to the next. I mean, look at the Major League Baseball playoffs, right? For a while, it was the teams who got byes who struggled in the divisional round. Will that be a factor tomorrow? I don't know, because if you ask any team in the conference, do you want to play Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, every single team is going to say, I want to play Thursday in the SEC quarterfinal. We want that to be our first game. So does it hurt Florida? I don't think so. Can it help Auburn to come in with two games under the belt and with some hot bats? I absolutely think so, and hope Auburn can ride it again one more time.
Britt Bowen, the voice of Auburn softball, with us here on the phone lines on ESPN 106.7. And find a new place to eat dinner tonight in Lexington. You got to find a new place to go and a new new place to give us a rating for, if you will. But plug your broadcast tomorrow, my friend. You're back on the air tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. sharp in Lexington.
Well, I will give you my favorite restaurant in Lexington. I know there are a couple good steakhouses, but there's a taco place right across the street from Rupp Arena. It's called Agave and Rye, some of the best tacos that I've ever come across in the Southeastern Conference. It's excellent. Look up the menu. The photos doesn't do it justice. It's awesome. But tomorrow, back for the SEC Tournament quarterfinal, Auburn in Florida. It will be a 10 a.m. start tomorrow, first pitch. We are on the air at 9:45 on WEGL 91.1 FM locally, online at auburntigers.com, the Auburn Tigers app, and for my mom and everyone else out there who loves Facebook. We also have her in the booth cam on the Auburn softball Facebook page. Listen to us there. All of those platforms are free. JJ and I would certainly be honored if you listen tomorrow, again, starting at 10 a.m. first pitch.
Well, look, if Auburn softball beats Florida and does it again tomorrow, we will do this again tomorrow at 3 o'clock on our show. Okay, buddy?
I'm also probably going to buy a lottery ticket, if I'm just being completely honest with you, because again, heck of a run by this team, and just thankful to be here to witness it.
Well, man, we appreciate you taking the time. I know it's a lot. I know you got prep to do, and you got some food to eat as well. Enjoy the evening. Get ready for tomorrow, and I hope we talk again tomorrow at 3 o'clock.
Jacob, thanks so much for having me on, man. War Eagle.
Britt Bowen, the voice of Auburn University softball, with us here. Back-to-back days on the show to talk Auburn University softball as the Tigers beat Missouri on day one, beat Texas A&M today with a three-run shot in the top of the seventh inning to give them an 11-8 lead, held on for an 11-8 win. They now take on the three-seeded Florida Gators tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. You heard it, WEGL, the student radio station, Weagle 91.1 here locally. You can find that on the Auburn Tigers app as well. We'll take a break and come back, give you some updates on the high school postseason landscape. Lee Scott in game one, they have an early lead. We'll tell you about that, plus what Auburn High is up to this week in the second round as well. All that here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We are back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. No Christian Griffin. He is over at Lee Scott, as they are in the Elite Eight in the 3A baseball playoffs. And not only are they underway, Lee Scott's off to a hot start. 5-0 lead for Lee Scott after one. They are taking on Thomasville in the Elite Eight. And my goodness, what a great start for them. Yeah, 5 runs in the first inning for Lee Scott in game one. That is over on Tiger Country 104.5. And so I don't recommend that you change the channel off of us, but if you have to, that's the place to go. Tiger Country 104.5, game one happening right now. Game two scheduled for 5 o'clock. It'll be closer to 5:30, but all of that this evening on Tiger Country 104.5. for Christian Griffin, Caleb Robertson on the call on the Lee Scott Sports Network. And so if he texts me any more updates, I will let you know. But they are up 5-0 in the first inning on Thomasville. So that's the 3A playoffs. We also have the 7A playoffs going on right now for baseball with myself and Jack Hutton on the Auburn High School Sports Network, where the Tigers head coach Tommy Carter, we are heading down to Enterprise on Friday. Okay, so heading down there, I will leave here with Jack about lunchtime, around noon, somewhere in there. We'll be heading down to Enterprise and taking on the Wildcats in the second round of the 7A playoffs. We are around behind, basically, of everybody else. And it's a rematch of the second round last year. Auburn High was able to host Enterprise a year ago, but that was an Enterprise team. Man, they were just so dominant. And they came in and unfortunately beat Auburn in two games in the second round a year ago. So Auburn's going to try and go down and return the favor in the second round. That's an Enterprise team, 32-5 on the season is their record. Pretty impressive stuff. I think Auburn is just as impressive, if not better, man. They played extremely well in the first round series for Auburn High Baseball against Daphne, and so very excited for that trip to be Friday. Are the first two games, the IF game on Saturday. I've just decided to quit looking at the weather because they just don't know. They simply have no idea. Hard job, yes, but they just don't know. I wish they would just admit it, and maybe we have a weather person. I tell you not to, don't use me as your weatherman, but maybe we have one listening that can give me some insights. It's like, I wish that we would just accept the idea that it's a straight-up prediction, not what they're saying is going to happen. And at that point, it's like, do you have odds? Like, do you have a record as a weatherman? Like, do you get a win-loss record or like an accuracy number? I feel like we don't get that, but we probably should. It's like, yeah, well, this weather guy, like James Spann, I mean, he's right 82% of the time, and this guy's only right 48% of the time. So I don't know. Say all that to say this, the weather in Enterprise is just kind of up in the air. Says it's going to rain sometimes, says it's not going to rain sometimes. So we will just go and set up, try to call the games the best we can, and if we have to adjust because of weather, we will do just that. But Auburn and Enterprise, round two of the 7A baseball playoffs. First pitch set for 5 o'clock on Friday. That's on 96.3 W Lee, 963WLEE.com. You need to download the Radio Alabama app. That's the best way for you to listen to everything we have going on. Game one at 5 o'clock on Friday, game 2 at 7:30 on Friday night down there in Enterprise, and then game 3 on Saturday is set for a 2 o'clock start if necessary. So, really excited for Auburn High Baseball. Two just shut down pitchers on the mound. Batting has really exploded. Bryson Shepherd was our Orthopedic Clinic High School Player of the Week this week. Had a 2-run homer in game 1 against Daphne. 2 doubles and a grand slam in game 2. So that was pretty much a no-doubter that he was going to be our player of the week for the Orthopedic Clinic. And so that's the high school baseball update in terms of Auburn High on Friday. Lee Scott happening right now. Some possible softball updates that I can't share just yet. We're waiting for everything to go final on that. But some possible shakeups, if you will, in the regional tournament for 7A softball. So I'll leave it at that. But again, Lee Scott and Thomasville happening right now over on Tiger Country 104.5. We're about to take our bottom of the hour break, and we're going to have our guy Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 join us. He's normally with us on Wednesdays at 2:30, but bumped him to 3:30. He was very kind to do that, and going to have him join us to talk all things Georgia, just because Christian could only be here for the first hour, so wanted to make sure that we had plenty of time to have some conversations and things. And so, we're about to have Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, and then looking ahead for just the rest of the week, doing some programming things here very quickly. Tomorrow is relatively normal, I think. I'll be here all day. Couple of great guests, Brad Law, Chris Gordy, hopefully Britt Bowen too. I hope we have Britt on again for the third day in a row. That'd be pretty phenomenal if Auburn is able to upset Florida in the SEC softball tournament. But I'll be here. Christian, if Lee Scott sweeps or gets swept, he'll be here tomorrow. If not, what time is their game, their IF game tomorrow? 3 o'clock? Okay, so he will most likely not be here then on the show. And then Friday is kind of up in the air. Just going to be really honest with you. Friday is up in the air right now for the show, just because of baseball and weather and who knows. I mean, Lee Scott could play their if game then if they need it. I'm out of town regardless, and, you know, Tripp may just not show up to work that day. So we might just I don't know. Friday's just kind of up in the air. So, you know, Tripp is extremely unreliable in his time that he's been here. So, you're going to defend yourself?
I mean, yeah, that's what they say, I guess. I don't know. I'd beg to disagree, but who knows?
I was
here last
too.
Week when I didn't even have to be. I came at 10 a.m.
You did. You did, in fact, show up when somebody lied to you. Not intentionally, but they did.
They forgot one word. Tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yeah. No, you're pretty good. You're all right. We'll take a break. We'll come back. You know who else is pretty good? Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. He joins us on the phone lines. Coming up next.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. And we get to the phone lines and welcome in a guy who's with us every single Wednesday here on ESPN 106.7. During On the Line, we head over to Athens and get the latest updates on Georgia athletics. And we bring in our man Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. Jordan, we appreciate you. Now that we're into the month of May, we feel like things are slowing down. But as you know as well as we do, there's always something to talk about in the sports world, my friend.
Yeah, I appreciate y'all having me back on. And yeah, we kind of get to this time of the year, and you know, even me on our side over at Dogs 24/7, like, what are we going to talk about, you know, throughout the week? And there's always something going on, which is great for us, and it certainly keeps the off season of football as well as men's basketball moving right along.
I mean, it's one thing I've learned in my little over 4 years in the radio side of this business is the times where you think there's nothing happening, something always happens, right? And it seems like right now the thing that has happened is what Ross Dellinger reported less than 24 hours ago about the coaches board. Okay, there is a board called the American Football Coaches Association, and they have come together and they have voted to expand the college football playoff with maximum participation. They've also voted to eliminate conference title games, and they want the college football playoff to be done by mid-January. We talked about this in earlier in the show, Jordan, but just for folks who maybe don't understand, this does not mean it's happening. This does not mean it's set in stone. This is just what the coaches now want for the game of college football. Your initial reaction to what the coaches are saying and what they're almost demanding.
Yeah, I'm not really surprised to see it. It kind of comes on the heels of last week when Kirby Smart was in Birmingham for the golf pro-am. He was asked about the SEC championship game, and he sort of basically his explanation, his rationale was he loves the SEC championship game, but if it needs to go away to get the entire season done earlier, you know, that he could basically find peace with that. And I think Kirby said that because he knows where this thing is trending. We're trending toward a 2014 playoff. We're trending toward getting rid of the conference championship games and trying to get the season done a little bit earlier than we are currently with it now going to, you know, basically the last week of January, at least the last full week of January. So to me, I am disappointed just as someone who's a college football fan. Personally, I don't think the playoff needs to go beyond 16 teams. Now, I will say this. I am in favor of getting the season done earlier. I mean, to be playing, you know, past Martin Luther King Day, like, that's just ridiculous in terms of scheduling. And, you know, there's been conversation about, hey, what if we started making week zero, week one, which would effectively, you know, get – the season started a little bit earlier, you know, would that help the logistics of everything? So, you know, like you mentioned, them pushing for this and recommending this does not mean, all right, it's happening for sure. But I think it's very much the ball's rolling in that direction. The coaches see it. And I think it's just a matter of time before it actually happens. And it makes me very interested for SEC spring meetings at the end of this month, because I'm sure
that
will be a lot of the conversation. And I don't know that a decision will be made before that, which will make that conversation even more intriguing.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to spark up more conversation, if nothing else, right? And now the coaches who, and again, not every coach in college football is a part of this, but there are some big names in there. Clark Lee from the SEC, from Vanderbilt, is in that group. And, you know, they have now made their opinions known, right? And they've come together and said, hey, this is what we want to happen. This is what we recommend. And again, it's almost like a demand, if nothing else. And so, yeah, I didn't think about that, Jordan, with the SEC spring meetings coming up. And I wonder how much deeper into this conversation they'll go at the end of this month.
Yeah, and the one thing I'll say with spring meetings, so much, especially the last few years, of what goes on there is not rule implementation. But a lot of it is just discussion and talking with Greg Sankey, talking with the football coaches, talking with the athletic directors about what they want and what they think. And I want to shout this out. Andy Bitter, who has covered Virginia Tech for a long time, I really appreciated the point he made specifically on the 2014 playoff. He was saying, you know, that you got to keep in mind that, of course, coaches want an expanded playoff. That means their team has a better chance to make the playoff. And you know, the point he made, if you're that 23rd, 24th team trying to make this playoff, you know, it's sort of a situation. What do you think looks better for your resume, for your job security, to say that, you know, you went to the ReliaQuest Bowl or that you made the playoff? And it's just one of those things that we're so far gone, so far down the road with people chasing the money in this sport rather than doing what's best for the sport itself. I'm not surprised, but I am disappointed. I mean, I think 16 is as far as you can go with the playoff. 24 is way too much, in my opinion. And it's just a matter of the big conferences, the SEC and the Big Ten especially, they're fighting to get, you know, 6-7 teams into a single playoff going forward.
Well, we had the conversation, what was this, last week or maybe 2 weeks ago, about the NCAA basketball tournament expanding. And it's like, okay, now the point on your resume of, well, I made the NCAA tournament in 2027. It's like, okay, cool. So did 75 other teams. And so do you now have to start to change your expectation? I don't think we're there yet with college football, but the more teams you let in, it's just a fact that the more teams that get in, the less sexy it is, the less attractive it is. It's not as big of a feat as it was way back when you were one of the two teams playing in the BCS National Championship game. We've got Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 with us on the phone lines, and we'll stick with football, but sounds like you put together some sound bites and some quotes from Kirby Smart about several new players on the Georgia football roster. They have wrapped up spring practice. G-Day has come and gone. You put out a great article on Dogs 247 about the things Kirby had to say. Which one stuck out to you, or maybe a couple that stood out to you about several players who just joined the Georgia football team in the last couple of months?
Yeah, it's been nice in the time since spring ended on April 18th to kind of review what we heard over the course of spring, and wrote a couple stories about the transfers coming in, you know, wrote a couple stories on the high school class, had quotes on 25 of about 28, 29 high school guys that Georgia signed. And, you know, some of the things that stood out, you know, starting with the high school guys, the big one for me was KJ Bolden saying Tyree Green reminded KJ of himself. Mm-hmm. And that was a comparison that had been made a lot because they're two Buford Wolves, two guys that were defensive backs and stood out there at Buford. And I think it's very natural to make that comparison with Tyreek, but he had an outstanding spring. I would go ahead and tell folks, keep an eye on him. As he gets ready for his freshman year, I think he's getting in the mix in that secondary somehow, some way. Very disappointing just looking through some of the quotes on Amaris Williams to see him get hurt. You know, more than likely he's going to be out for the season. Maybe he's able to come back for the postseason. It all just depends on how his recovery from that knee injury goes. But, you know, looking at some of the quotes, just talking about his speed and Raylan Wilson, Georgia's inside linebacker, saying he's a one-speed guy and can really get moving. And, yeah, I think that Georgia did a really good job with this roster reload. You know, the eight transfers that they got, I think, you know, again, Amaris would have played a really big role had he been healthy. But for the most part, I'd say at least six of the other guys that they signed have a chance to play legitimate roles and be very important for this team. And then this high school class, I would say really since K.J. Bolden's signing class, you know, like the class last year, there were a few freshmen who really stood out, like Elijah Griffin and Rayshon Dinkins on defense. I really think this freshman class right now, I think they've already turned heads and made quite an impression. I'm expecting several of these freshmen. You know, I mentioned Tyree Green. I would say Zakai Helton, who's an offensive guard. Craig Dandridge, a receiver. I think those guys are going to get in the mix. Valden Stone, a defensive tackle as well. Those guys are going to play and, you know, probably not going to be starters, but I think you're going to see them contribute quite a bit and even be able to do so fairly early on in the season.
Well, it's still so mind-boggling to me that a team like Georgia, who's obviously so good and so competitive and so consistent, that you said eight, right? Eight portal additions they made in the offseason. It's just, you compare that to, yes, like what Auburn is doing, but that's because of a new coach and things. But even other places that have had coaches in place for several years, they're still getting double-digit minimum transfer portal additions. And Georgia's like, yeah, we know we need a running back, we need a backup linebacker, and we need a kick returner. Other than that, we're good to go. We feel confident with what our roster is, and one of those guys that I think we talk about him every single week with you, Jordan, is Dante Dowdell, who the more I watch him, the more I look into him, the more I read about him at 6'2", 225 pounds. I mean, man, he just looks like a Georgia running back, and we haven't even seen him play a true game in the Georgia uniform yet, but he just screams Georgia running back for what they've had for all these years.
Yeah, he was the guy as they got commits during that portal window. I always go back and watch highlights of the guys. I write stories about, you know, what I think they're going to do at Georgia, how they fit in. And Dante Dowdell was the guy that I was like, I don't know that fans are excited enough about him. I was very impressed. I've kind of called him a mercenary. He was at Kentucky last year, Nebraska the year before that, Oregon the year before that, but he's very impressive. He had a really good spring. He had a fantastic G-Day. I mean, it's like the fourth quarter of a scrimmage, and he's, you know, he's hurdling guys.
Yeah.
He's running down the sideline. He made a very strong impression. So I think the backfield's in a really good spot, and something that I think Georgia probably already knew but has learned the hard way a couple times the last few years is that you've really got to lean on your depth at running back. You can't say, all right, we have two really good running backs at the top of this room, and you know, the rest, you know, we're hoping they'll come along, because it's so easy for those guys to get hurt and for you to have to rely on the depth that you got behind them. I really like what Georgia's got with Nate Frazier, and I'd say Chauncey Bowen's probably at the top of the room, but I think Dante Dowdell's going to play quite a bit, and I'm expecting him to be a very big contributor for this team and make quite of an impression in his senior year at Georgia.
Well, there's a lot happening with Georgia football as we talk with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, our weekly guest with us on Wednesday afternoons here on ESPN 106.7. Do want to flip over to basketball, though, where there is some news there. It's been a busy week for Georgia basketball, signing several guys, mostly from the high school ranks, Jordan, but starting to fill that roster out for Mike White for the upcoming season.
Yeah, they've had a few roster spots that have still been open, and they've been busy in the past week. I don't recall if we talked about this last week. I think it happened after I was on, but they land James Scott, the Ole Miss center, 6'10". I think you're talking about the guy that will be Georgia starting five this year. And then this week they've turned their attention to the high school ranks. They started the week landing Donovan Williams Jr. He is a combo guard out of Orlando, Florida. He was a UCF signee. And then Georgia got him to reopen, and he winds up flipping to Georgia. And then just shortly before we wind up recording this today, Jacob, we saw Georgia landed another big man,
yeah.
Hakeem Weems from Marietta, Georgia, 6'10", a guy that played at Montverde, which has turned out a lot of talented guys over the years. And he's actually coming off a post-grad year at IMG Academy. So they've got one scholarship spot left. I would imagine if they fill that, they're going to try to get another guard. I think they need a little bit more help behind Smurf Millender at the point. But I like the two high school guys they've gotten in the past few days, especially Donovan Williams. I think that very talented three-point shooter. I think if he can really fine-tune his defense and kind of learn what it takes to play at this level, I think he's got a chance to contribute as a freshman and be part of a backcourt that I think can be very talented and can hold its own among the SEC's best.
Well, it's trying to, Georgia, that is, trying to get back to the NCAA tournament, trying to be competitive in an SEC basketball landscape that has just completely exploded with so many big-name coaches and big-name players, and Georgia trying to be right there in the mix as well. He is Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. He has joined us every single Wednesday here on the show, and I know Olivia is covering baseball. Georgia baseball seems to be just off and running and maybe too out in front for anybody to catch them in the SEC. Of course, the Dogs will be making a trip here to Auburn next weekend for the regular season finale in the SEC slate. But I know she's doing an incredible job covering Georgia baseball, one of the best teams in the country.
Yeah, they've now won 7 in a row. They're getting ready to host LSU. The last I saw, Georgia, I think they need the magic number is 4 to be able to clinch the SEC, which would be quite an accomplishment. But like you said, Olivia Sayer doing a fantastic job covering baseball for us. She'll have it handled this weekend as LSU comes to town. And like you said, if you're an Auburn fan listening to this, you may want to follow along this weekend because they got a big series coming up. They're in Auburn the following weekend.
Yeah, well, man, we appreciate her efforts covering Georgia baseball, and we appreciate you for always joining us each and every week here on the show. Plug it all. Tell the people how they can find all the latest info on Georgia basketball, Georgia football, and Georgia baseball there with Dogs 247.
Definitely, dogs247.com, on Twitter at Jordan Davis Hill, on Twitter at dogs247. We got a 50% off sale going on right now, and I'll make sure and shout out my friends over there at Auburn Undercover. The same sale is going on there. So if you're an Auburn fan hearing this, go check it out. Jason Caldwell, Nathan King, Christian Clemente, they all do a fantastic job covering Auburn. We got the Junkyard Dogcast podcast. We just did another episode on Tuesday, looking back at our spring breakouts draft to see the guys that hit that had really good springs, the other guys that maybe we kind of swung and missed on our picks, but a fun episode there as we keep working through the off season. So a lot to still write about, a lot of stuff to still talk about. And again, still following along the Georgia baseball coverage. They've had a fantastic season. And as we already mentioned, Olivia Sayer doing a great job covering the Diamond Dogs for us.
Jordan, appreciate it as always, my friend. We'll do it again this time next week. And, you know, once we get closer to the summer, we'll give you a week off here and there since the news will be slowing down a little bit. But here over the next couple of weeks, there's still so much to talk about, so we always appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, Jacob.
That is Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. Again, he joins us every single Wednesday here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. We will take a break, come back, and have more for you on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Thanks to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 for joining us a little bit later, an hour later, actually, than we normally do with him. But appreciate him for being on the show, being a longtime guest of this show, and one of the most reliable guests of this show as well. And so if you missed any of that conversation, any of our conversation with Britt Bowen of Auburn Softball, the voice of Auburn University Softball, he joined us on the phone lines live from Lexington as Auburn got it done again. Tigers advance another round. They get a big 3-run shot in the top of the 7th inning against Texas A&M. They now take on the 3-seeded Florida Gators tomorrow. So we had a chance to talk with Britt for back-to-back days. That was exciting. Christian was in the studio for hour number one. We talked Auburn baseball. We talked some college football. Had a fun conversation. So really a good show on this Wednesday afternoon. So if you missed any of it, you can always go back and listen to the podcast version of the show on our station website at ESPNAU.com in the podcast center, or you can check it out wherever you get your podcast. An update from over on the Lee Scott Sports Network. Lee Scott has blown it open big time. They took a 5-0 lead in the first inning against Thomasville. Bottom three, it's 10-1, Lee Scott, in that Elite Eight matchup. So hopefully Lee Scott's able to hold on to that and maybe get a run rule victory there. They're trying to squeeze both games of that series in pretty much before 7 o'clock because that's when the weather moves through. And it ain't going to stop until the sun comes up tomorrow. So they're trying to get that series in. It's a best of three. Lee Scott on their way, hopefully, to winning game one. Maybe they can back that up with a game two win and a sweep and not have to worry about it and be done and on to the final four. And so we'll give you more updates on that tomorrow. We'll also have Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network. We will have Chris Gordy, the Locked On SEC podcast, will be with us as well. And if Auburn University softball wins again tomorrow morning at 10 a.m., we'll have Britt Bowen right back here on the show to talk to him about that again. And so that is tomorrow from 2 to 4 here on ESPN. Friday still up in the air, so we'll update you more tomorrow as we have a better idea because I am out Friday. I will be heading down to Enterprise for the second round of the 7A playoffs for Auburn High School Baseball. So more on that as the week goes on, but tune on over. Tiger Country 104.5. Game 1 is currently in progress for Lee Scott against Thomasville. Game 2 coming up 30 minutes after the conclusion of Game 1. So spend your Wednesday evening with Christian Griffin and Caleb Robertson on the Lee Scott Sports Network. And then come back here tomorrow and you can spend your afternoon with us from 2 to 4 on ESPN 106.7. Until then, I'm Jacob Goins saying stay safe. We'll talk to you later.